It works. Oh, that's. Now it's me. Let me go this way a little bit. Oh, man. This thing is making me crazy. This magnifying glassy thingy here. See? Look at how big it is. How'd you do that? I try not to. I need to get a trackball. So, can you, everybody hear me? Nobody can hear me? Oh, good. Okay, any questions about what we went over last week? Any questions in general? Okay, go ahead, Omar. Rabbi, is it right for me to say that whatever happens in life, whether good or bad, is the will of Hashem? Yes. Right. Yes. It's all a plan. And a constant test. See, what happens, Omar, is, as an example, we all have traits and things that we want to correct in self. The movie Ushpizin is about a man who was a street thug, I guess you would call it, in Hebrew, pushtak, and he decided to turn over a new leaf, so to speak. He would rage and he would hurt people. He did a lot of leg breaking in his time, and he decided to go into a Breslover yeshiva and study and change his mitos, his self, his attributes. And so what happened was, is he was tested. Once everything had changed, all he wanted was a very happy wife and a child. And he was tested by these two visitors that you saw in the movie, the guy with the bald head and the guy with corn rolls. And they had a job to do to test him, and he passed the test, and you see it at the end of the movie what happened. So, in short, Omar, to answer your question, things are already known what we're going to do. If we change ourselves for the better, we are constantly tempted with things from the past. There are things that I have done in the past that constantly come up to test me and to see if I've indeed changed. And that's pretty much what goes on. Yeah, the test makes the life interesting, but the secret is to recognize when the test starts. So if you can figure out when the test starts and understand that it's a test, then you go, aha, okay, I get it, and go with it, watch what happens. It is the tough part, but you know something? Omar, what I have discovered over the years is to become more self-aware. The biggest sin a Jew can do is called Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is worse than murder, adultery, incest, idolatry combined. It's hideous. Lashon Hara is just the worst. And so I spent a lot of time, you know, analyzing this because the Chofetz Chaim is one of my favorite rabbis. And one thing that I discovered over the years is, where does the thought, the words I'm going to say, where does it form? It forms in the subconscious. I'm not aware of that. That's the side that God knows. God knows this on a subconscious level. It's thought that we're not even aware of. Then as this subconscious thought works its way into the conscious and formulae and forms and rolls around inside your head and becomes a thought, and at that point we can decide what to do with it. And we have a choice. We can speak it or not speak it, watch the temptation and give into it or not. And if we decide we want to say it and it's not in our best interest, God has given us some things to stop it. We have a tongue that can flip up in our mouth, and our teeth can slam down, and our lips can slam down. And we have been given all sorts of ways not to speak ill of other people. Because it's very, very hard to do. We've got a faculty of speech. So therefore, when you're consciously thinking about what is going on in your head and think about it, my mother used to say, put your mind in gear before you put your mouth in motion, which was kind of very wise, is a nice little saying, you become aware of what you're going to say. And as soon as you become more self-aware, these tests that come up don't catch us as off guard. Sometimes we'll be in the middle of something we shouldn't be doing or at the beginning of something that we're contemplating, and all of a sudden we put on the brakes and say, oh, been there, done that, I am not going back there. So to further answer your question, both Steve and Omar, becoming much more self-aware is very, very important. All tests are not interesting, very, very true. Some are very, very painful, and some are there to remind us of things we once were that weren't necessarily pretty. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. Or when you pray for help and the help comes as a not-so-good thing, but a thing that gives the message your prayers are being answered, recognize it as the test, an answer, or an avenue to the prayer change. You guys are brilliant. You guys, this is excellent. Yes, indeed. Most of us in here are adults. I'm still working on that part myself. But we, didn't even get a chuckle out of that one. But we're constantly tested. And the more you know, the more you study, the more devious the test. Yeah, I saw that. It's pretty cool. It's very good. Thank you very much. Yeah, excellent. Use, what's that font called? New Times Roman. My tests have always, well, it's my faith, yeah. Yep. Yeah. You're not the, it's okay, it's beautiful, thank you. Angel, it's so true, because the things that come up, and the constant test, and sometimes they're very devious, sometimes they hop out, sometimes they catch you when you're tired, sometimes they catch you when you don't feel good, sometimes they come at you when you're mentally worn down. You know, there's stuff going on in all our lives that just impact us. But yes, indeed, there are tests. Wow, this is fun. I like when you guys start off like this. Okay, anything else? Oh, I see people typing. That's what I like about this class. I learned. The best thing, Omar, is being the teacher. I learned from you guys. I mean, even as a public school teacher, I learn so much from the people I teach. And those of you who have children, you want to learn about yourself, watch your kids. Your children will show you so much about you. It's amazing. Yeah, Francis, yes. Now, I've got 4 kids, and each kid shows me a different attribute of myself, and sometimes it's a bit scary. So, Yeah, your children will show you more about you than you care to see. What about trade rumors in sports? Is that wrong? Oh, no. You mean hearing that maybe Shaq is going to be traded to the Celtics or something? That's not Lesson Horror. That's sports. Well, here's an interesting thing. what's the thinnest book in the world? The book on Jewish sports heroes. There are a few of them, but not many of us. From Jews, really, really don't get involved in a lot of sports. I took a couple years off from golf, because anybody know why they call it golf? Nobody knows why they call it golf? Because all the other 4-letter words were taken. there are words on the golf course that I haven't heard since I was in the Navy. But actually, the word golf, G-O-L-F, originally, sorry ladies, but it originally golf meant gentlemen only, ladies forbidden. That's it's an acronym. True. So anyway, my biggest, my largest, hugest difficulty was keeping my temper on the golf course. And I stopped playing for a while because my temper was getting the best of me. You know, you muff a shot or something like that. No, I want you out there driving the golf cart. You should be out there doing Brody's. Cool. Anyway, I have changed myself. I've been doing wheelies. I have changed myself greatly on the golf course. My game's not too bad. I'm kind of like a bogey golfer, which is kind of all I want to be when I grow up. And I can hit the ball. I mean, I can crush the ball. But if you're humming along and you're putting for an eagle or putting for a birdie and you miss it, and it's very simple to, at that point, because you're so much concentrating and being so competitive, to lose one's temper. And so what I have done is I gave up the sport for a while in order to get my meatos in order. And now I go out, I spend more time on the golf course laughing. And the funniest sound on a golf course is listening to a ball hit a tree. And believe me, I've hit most of the trees on most of the courses out here. I've hit some shots you wouldn't believe. I've hit some the funniest ones in the world. But anyway, that's a topic of another discussion. We'll move on to class. Any other questions? Yes, no? Okay. Yeah, my wife has got a couple of stories about me and trees. Okay, a couple of things that came up earlier this morning in a discussion that I do want to pass on that is really important to understand. Being a Noahide / righteous Gentile, which is what the people in here are, the ones who decided to walk away from whatever they were and have taken on this mantle of being a righteous Gentile, also a.k.a. Noahide. Ooh, that wasn't good. A.k.a. Noahide. it's very, very important to understand. There are really no rituals for you. There are really... There's no set form of prayer. And there's really only 7 laws that have to be followed. The difficulty that I am personally experiencing is people who have come out of a highly ritualistic form of faith that is rich in some form of literature step into a program where there are 7 laws, 6 don't do that you get credit for by just not doing, and 1 you do. And you got an easy route into heaven. It's that simple. The difficulty is people who've come out of various other faiths and other backgrounds who have it in mind that they have to do all of these things or do this a certain way at a certain time, etc. And that's not necessary at all. It's more than an identity crisis. It is an identity crisis of some sorts. But people are looking for the meat of being a righteous Gentile. The meat are 7 laws. That's it. That's it. Number 7 up there, the commandment to establish laws in courts of justice. That's the only one you have to do. And in North America, if you vote and you vote for judges and stuff like that, you did it. You're done. And all the other ones, the other six, simply don't do those, and you get credit. So, if you're looking for some highly ritualistic, if you're looking for some form of if you're looking for something along the lines of that, that's not what this group, that's not what this system of belief is all about. You guys have it really remarkably easy. The difficult part is, and as Twisted just said, is to find out who you are. Okay? Yeah. Yes, been there, X that, only converted through reform, which doesn't feel real. Yeah. There's a lot more to do, Twisted. There's a lot more to do. So the beauty of this class is what we're going through is this book called The Divine Code, and the person who is working on Volume 2, which God willing and the creek don't rise, will be here in this month, right? We're in Tammuz, right? Yeah, it's supposed to be out this month. Volume 2 is supposed to be out this month. So if everything goes right, we'll have Volume 2. And in short, this is what is called the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch for Noahides. What that means is the laws that are in the Divine Code, it spells out what the seven are and how they're supposed to be done or not done. And that's your responsibility. That's what you have to know. The Mashiach arrives. Understand this. The Mashiach arrives. There's other faiths out there in the world that say that you have to convert to this religion to be saved or go here or don't go there or something like that. There's all these other faiths that say that. Judaism doesn't say that. You don't have to be like me. In fact, when the Mashiach arrives, you can't be like me. During good times, you can't become a Jew. So the Mashiach comes, everybody's going to be what they are. And the advantage is, those of you that are righteous Gentiles right now, the Mashiach arrives tomorrow, guess who you guys get to go live with? Us! How cool is that? Come over to my house for a barbecue on Sunday. And that's it. That's going to be the beauty of all this. There's other faiths that say, well, when the Messiah comes, you're going to be like me. No, I'm not going to be like them. They're not going to even be like me. Because when the Mashiach arrives, you can't. Am I cooking? Yeah. Dude, yeah. We had a friend came over. Oh, this is great. We had a friend of mine. This is cool. I have a student of mine who, you're going to start him? Yay, team. A student of mine, when I first started teaching 7th and 8th grade, she was in my class, and this was a real hard case. This young lady never smiled. Never smiled. She just came across as a real hard woman. Well, I took it upon myself to try and get her to smile, which she never did. It took a year and a half, but she finally smiled. Well, she went through high school, came back to visit as an adult, visited. She got married and visited, and now she's in touch with my wife and talking to my wife. She's 29 years. She's now 29 years old, and she's come over to our house, and she's teaching us how to cook Mexican food. And man, that's good stuff. So we have all the ingredients, and we're going to be cooking some what they call mayacoba beans. They're Peruvian beans, and they're just like a ridiculously yummy. So. That's what we're in the process of making. So this young lady's going to be coming over a few Wednesday evenings to teach us how to cook various things, chimichangas and chili rellenos and all that stuff. So, and chili rellenos, if I'm not mistaken, are very labor intensive. But I still want to learn how to make it because I like that kind of food. And you can't just run out to your local Taco Bell and get yourself a double pork burger or something. Cooking with a rat. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you guys need to understand this. Somebody has, there are people who have come up to me, and as an example, at work you'll have potlucks and all of that good stuff. No, Thursday's cooking for Shabbos night. It has to be a different night than that. So anyway, these people have come up to me in the past, or they have potlucks at work, and you know, they ask me to bring something, so I'll bring something for the potluck. I don't eat there, but I'll bring something. I don't mind doing that. What is barf? Barf is when you throw up. It's a, it's in the vernacular in English, you'd call it barf, so anyway. Yeah. So anyway, somebody says, wow, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. And people have said that to me for a very long time. Oh, you can't eat ham. Oh, you can't eat sausage. Oh, you can't eat surf and turf, etc. I can eat anything I want. I choose not to. It's a choice, okay? We're supposed to abstain from certain foods because the big guy said abstain from certain foods. But if I choose to step off the derrick and munch a chunk of, you know, shrimps, whatever, scampi, octopus, eyeballs, or whatever it is, that would be my choice. It's not that I can't. I'm sure ham tastes whatever hammy tastes like, and bacon tastes what bacon tastes like, and sausage and all that. I can smell them cooking a mile away, but I choose not to. So these people who've felt sorry for me all this time look at me just puzzled. What do you mean? You don't eat this? No, I choose not to. And that's perfectly fine. Oh, I'm sorry, June. Choice. Now, every time I say no to bacon, I smile because it's a mitzvah. Excellent. Yep. Yep. You know what's interesting, Twisted? Pig flesh, like pork rinds, can be kosher, but the meat isn't. Think about that. And there's some other things about pig that that a lot of people don't know. Yeah. Yep. How is that? Because it says in Torah not to eat the meat. Doesn't even say anything about the skin. Very simple. If you can get somebody to kosher some pork rinds for you, knock yourself out. Just no rabbi will do that because it's a little thing called marasayan. How cool is that? And wait a second, it gets better than that. Of all the animals on the earth, think about this. I'm going to address that in a second, Jim. think about the animals in Torah that are specified to either eat or not to eat. And there's a lot more, and there were a lot more animals on the face of the earth. So why are some of the animals that are mentioned in Torah mentioned exclusively? I mean, you're not going to, are you going to see an elephant in Torah somewhere? What about a leopard? What about a turtle? Guess what? There are people in America that won't eat turkey. Did you guys know that? There are Jews in North America, Orthodox Jews, that won't eat turkey. Can I have some more of this, please? Why? Because it's not mentioned in Torah. I'm serious. You can go to Empire, you can find yourself an Empire turkey and cook it, and they're yummy, man. I like turkey's excellent. Yeah, but turkey's not mentioned in Torah. So there are people who say, and this is Emmis, there are people in that I have met that won't eat turkey because it's not mentioned in Torah. They won't eat it. Now, what is it? Jewish ham radio operators are kosher. Well, there's a little bit of humor here and a little bit of seriousness. You know the swine flu stuff that's running around? I was at work and the school nurse came up to me and said, you know, aren't you worried about swine flu in your classroom? I says, no. She says, what if your students get it? I said, so? There's nothing I can do about that. I hope they get well soon. She says, why aren't you worrying about it? I says, because I'm Jewish. Jews don't get swine flu. It's against our religion. And I walked away and she went, That was a hoot. That was worth the price of admission. She just looked at me with her mouth hanging open. And I also told her that we don't have hamstrings. Jews don't have hamstrings. We have brisket strings. I says, look it up. You're a nurse. And I walked away again. So anyway, yeah, there's a lot of discussion in the Jewish community about swine flu, but that's a topic of another discussion. Okay, any other? There's some new people here. Yisrael Katz, hello, welcome. June is new. Hello, June. Do I know you, June? Aleichem Shalom. Where are you from, Katz? Miami. Ooh. My sister lives down in the Fort Lauderdale area. My in-laws, my ex-in-laws used to live in Boca Raton. Well, Del Rey area. You're in Palm Beach? Nice. Very nice. Nice. Is that Izzy? Oh, Izzy. Hey, how are you? Good. Wow, I haven't seen you for a while. Okay. If there are no further questions, nice. Wow, I haven't seen Izzy in a very long time. I live on the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia. In Australia. Isn't it like something like Wednesday breakfast or Wednesday lunchtime there now or something? You guys are like a week ahead of us and... I have no... When you get more than about three or four time zones, I get lost. You guys are out somewhere. I'd like to go to Australia sometime. People ask me why. I said, because it's one of those places that I think is fascinating. Actually, once upon a time when I was working on my master's degree, I had to do some research, and some of the research was in a library in Melbourne, I believe it was. And so I looked it up on the internet and got the phone number, and I called this guy in Melbourne. It was his house, and he's sitting in his house. Dinner time, he said he had his dinner and he says he's watching the telly, and I called his house. And he was like really a nice guy. We talked for two or three minutes, you know, I'm calling Australia, and he looked up the phone number for me in his phone book and gave it to me. It was like one of the coolest wrong numbers I ever got. The coolest wrong number was someone who called me from the Philippines once looking for somebody. It's like really wild. Okay, it should be fall in Australia now or something like that. Okay, I need to get started. It's midwinter. Oh, yeah, that's right, because we're past the 21st, like I said. Okay, we're on chapter 12 of the Divine Code, and this is the section we're continuing on that's been going on now. How many pages have we been doing of this? We've got about 130 pages on this particular topic, and the topic is the prohibition of idolatry. And if you take a look at it over here, we're still on number one. We'll eventually get to blasphemy probably in book two. But like I said, as the rabbi I talked to in Baltimore, this is really considered the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for Bnei Noach. All right. Chapter 12, the prohibition of swearing or vowing in the name of an idol. And again, I recommend these books. Now we have that posted up there. And the reason is these are the laws you're responsible for. And these will give you the details. Now, Our dreidel from way back when. Yeah. Yeah. Dreidel is actually, she'll be here in a second. She's, she'll get back in here. Yeah. I married that nice young lady in 2005. Yeah. I married my dreidel. Hang on a second. Yoo-hoo, dreidela. Yep. I married her. Best thing I ever did in my entire life. Hang on a second. She's doing homeworky stuff, so she'll be here in a second. I'll get her to stick her nose over here in a second. She's a little bit on the camera shy side. But she'll be here in a minute. Okay. Prohibition of swearing or vowing in the name of an idol. And you said we're going to get to blasphemy? Oh, yeah. We'll be going into blasphemy. Prohibition of the limb of a living animal. Wow. Cool. Thank you. We got married at the end of October of 05. So we're still newlyweds. Let me go get her. Here, I called her in. She'll be here in a second. Wave hello to Izzy. Izzy right over there. Say hi, Izzy. No. Stick your little noodle over there. You're a cutie pie. Tell, say hello. Yeah, say hello. There she is. Oh, that was her. She is, like, amazingly camera shy. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe at the end he'll play his flute. I can ask him if you want. When you come back in, ask him when you get back online. If he sticks around, maybe he'll play. He should hear Izzy play the flute. Very cool. So if he's around. All right, let's get going. Now, again, I'm going to read and do some explanation of the stuff above the line. Below the line are the details and the footnotes that explain in a lot greater detail. Oh, it's not a problem, Izzy. It's great seeing you. Ooh. I strongly recommend you get the book and read the stuff below the line, because the stuff below the line goes into a lot greater detail. And you really need to study it and read it. You don't need the books it refers to, but you need to read the footnotes. It is forbidden to swear in the name of idolatry. The Rambam, the Law of Kings, states that Gentiles are forbidden to practice idolatry in any way. Surely they're forbidden to swear in its name, as the Rambam states, in the laws of worship of stars and idols. In regard to Jews, that is forbidden. It is forbidden from the verse in Exodus 23:13, you shall not mention the name of other gods. These are forbidden for Gentiles, not from separate prohibitions, but rather from the general prohibition regarding all aspects of idolatry. Now, here's something that has, in a place where I work, which, God willing, and the creek don't rise, won't be very much longer. When other religions' names come up, and I prefer not to write the name out. In fact, my current superintendent and I got into it when I wrote down the word Xmas and Xianity, etc. And he took me to task over that, and he was kind of upset that I did that. And I told him exactly the reason, and I sent him 5 links from the internet why Jews may not mention those names, and I won't even write them on the board. If my children during that time of year, if my students decide that they want to write a little essay about what they're going to do, that's up to them. I am on number 2 on 250, June. I will let them write the word on the board. I do my level best not to go there at all. I've even have parents come in if they want to do a little lesson on the subject, because, well, whatever. But he asked me why, and I told him and showed him why with several links from some very basic websites out there, and he could track it, look it up himself. And with that, and this is something that if you have a boss or group of people you work with that are Vayigash, no, it's Korach, is this week's Torah portion. No, this book is the Divine Code. We're here. So, anyway, that is something that we should not do. We shouldn't, there's a lot of things in Jewish thought we should not do, and this book is going to go into what Bnei Noach shouldn't do under the umbrella of idolatry or swearing or vowing in the name of an idol. Number two, I'm on page 250. It is forbidden to swear in the name of an idol, even if one intends it falsely. Oh, that's not a problem, June. Whether one swears regarding the past or about what one will do in the future, insomuch as one thereby mentions the idol's name in a way of praise to others. Also, it's forbidden to lie, swear falsely, or take back one's word. Someone who does so is as if he serves idols. Now, there are some words and colorful metaphors in English that people use, and they mentioned other gods with the small g's name, and that some people have a tendency to do their level best to stop doing. What about the calendars? The calendar that we use in North America is pretty much a universal calendar, and you know, it's the month of June is the month of June. But I don't write 6, as an example, 6-23-09, June 23rd-09. But it's the month of Tammuz, and so when you're talking to some friends, or some of my friends in New York, when I talk to them, they refer to that because that's the community they live in. If you're in a from community, even though in your work, whatever you do, you're referring to the secular calendar, when they're talking about baby names, they're talking about bar mitzvahs, they're talking about this, that, or the other, wedding dates, it's by the Jewish calendar. Okay? Let's keep going. It is also forbidden to swear in the name of an entity which others serve as an idol, such as the sun, even if he does not himself intend to serve it at all. He only intends to swear by its constant existence. Nevertheless, since others consider it to be a deity, it is forbidden to swear in its name, as it appears to others if he's swearing by their beliefs. Nowadays, when no one believes in the sun or stars as deities, one may clearly swear by in their names. These are only mentioned here as past examples of popular idols. So, once upon a time, when people were swearing by the sun, the moon, or the stars, but as there aren't people like that today, or if they are, I don't know where they're hiding, that was only used as an example. It is forbidden to mention the names of idols in a way of praise. As it says, you shall not mention the name of other gods, nor shall it be heard from your mouth. A person should not tell his friend, guard this item for me next to such and such an idol, or meet me on the festival day of such and such an idol, in order not to mention the name of an idol in a respectable fashion. So if that wasn't clear, you shouldn't tell a friend you're going to meet beside, well, we have out in California here, we have these missions, and the missions are up and down the state, which is kind of interesting because kids go there on field trips, and it makes it a slight dilemma for those of us who don't go in there. But anyway, we don't say we're going to meet you inside of this chapel over here and there and everywhere. That's just not done. Valerie's back. Can we attend a non-Jewish wedding? What an interesting question. We've had this discussion a few times in here. We've had this discussion here a couple of times. If it is a family wedding, a very close family, B'nai Noach, and you are going to create a tremendous rift in the family if you don't show up, you should go. But some of the things that they do in the wedding, like in some of them, I think if they do what's called, they do a mass beforehand, that the whole service before they get married, they shouldn't be there for that. But to sit there and watch someone get married and congratulations and all that, I mean, you still have a family. You know, you're not going to isolate yourself from your family. But as far as friends or acquaintances, I would use your own best judgment. I wouldn't go personally. There you go, fashionably late. Francis, you're brilliant. I have been invited to a lot of weddings. In fact, some of my students who've grown up and gotten married, and they send me an invitation, this church, and usually the easiest way I get out of it is most of them will send me an invitation for a Saturday noon wedding. And I, you know, wish them all the best and all that and tell them I don't travel on Shabbos, and that gets me out of it. I would venture to guess 95% of them, that's when they'll have them on a Saturday. But the other ones, you know, I only may go to the, if it's a student of mine and they have a reception in a hall or something like that, or their house, I'll stop by, say congratulations and all that and leave. But usually not to the ceremony inside a house of worship in some other faith. I just don't do that. And enough people have known me for a very long time to understand that. We have even had, and this is another dilemma coming up, and this has happened over the years for me personally, and hopefully this helps you out, B'nai Noach. My uncle had his 80th birthday 2 summers ago, and it was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday kind of thing, and Monday people were flying out. And so we arrived late on Thursday. We flew into Newark, and we spent Friday and Saturday at my Chavrutza's house in Spring Valley. Then we took a bus into the city early. We got a ride into the city early on Sunday morning. So in essence, we missed the big. It was my uncle's 80th. It was a huge big deal. We missed the festivities that they did on a Friday. We missed the bus tour on Saturday to see all of my uncle's haunts were. And I did call the caterer and did get a kosher meal for my wife and I for the thing on Sunday. So sometimes even within my family, because of stuff that they do, I've missed out, and that's just the way it goes. It's the lifestyle that my wife and I have, and we sometimes miss too. So I understand what you're saying, how much you'd like to go, or what should you do. If you have a local advisor, B'nai Noach, a rabbi that you work with locally, ask him, or send me an email, or I can send you off to my rabbi in New York, and you can ask him a question. Next question, any other ones? Ooh, look, the room is filling up nicely. Okay. Number 4, I'm on page 252. 19 people in here. Nice. Can't wait till it's 190 people. That's going to be a blast. Even though there is no prohibition in mentioning the name of an idol casually, it is nevertheless unfitting that a person should make it his habit to mention such a name, since it brings one to be drawn after the idol or to respect it, which is forbidden, as mentioned above in topic 2.1. Do not turn to idols. Therefore, it is permitted to mention their names if there is a personal need for it. It is not in a respectful way, and surely if the mention of it is to dishonor them. What about studying a culture's mythology when studying ancient Greece or Rome? Are you talking about it's a college class? Alan, that's the main reason I won't teach sixth grade. Sixth grade is, you're teaching elementary. Sixth grade in California is the ancient world, and most teachers out here spend a tremendous amount of time on the Egyptian culture, which is, you know, one huge death cult. I mean, there's one teacher I know just sets up the inside of their classroom to look like the inside of an Egyptian tomb, and it's like really creepy, so I choose not to teach that grade level. If you're teaching something where it's the lower grades, it's easy. It's like community or something like that. But in college courses, if you take a humanities class, if you take an anthropology class, or some other English class with that, you're going to run into it. And the toughest one, Alan, so mummifying chickens is not an okay activity. Well, I don't want to talk about anybody's personal cooking habits, but if you're into mummifying chickens for a Friday night, I'm not going to go there. And believe me, I've seen some people mummify chickens. I mean, the stuff that comes out will break your teeth. But then again, what can I say? Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's, now there's, National Geographic came out a couple of months ago with an article on a female pharaoh, and it listed, I think, 5 or 6 female pharaohs. And it was an interesting article to read. You know, National Geographic is kind of cool. There's some very, very, very interesting things, and there's Smithsonian this month if you get it. It's on the terracotta army that was left. I gotta stay away from your crosstalk. You guys crack me up. You guys are very, very funny sometimes. Okay. You know, somebody asked, here's a question somebody asked. It says here, therefore it is permitted to mention their names if there is a personal need for it, and it is not in a respectful way, and surely if the mention is to dishonor them. There are some people who take this part of it a little bit more to heart. They need to be a little bit careful. Ridiculing other people's faiths and beliefs, especially if there are still family members of yours that are steeped in that, as it were, I would be very careful. You're still dealing with family. Sometimes discretion is the better part of valor, or not mentioning is better. Enough said on that one. Sometimes that's hard. You know, you've walked away from a belief system that some of you were involved with for most of your life, if not all of your life, and you've walked away from that, and you've embraced a system of belief that really doesn't have a system. It has 6 laws that you shouldn't do and 1 that you should do, and you get credit by not doing them and doing that one, and you don't have anything else that you need to do. Other people don't understand that. They just don't understand that. I have a lot of discussions out here. I mean, where I live, there's always door knockers, and you just run into them no matter where you go. They're everywhere. And God willing, my wife and I get out of here. We're planning on moving back into the Muncie area. That'll be a wonderful thing. Okay, let's keep going. Five, I am on page 252. I'm on number five. It is permitted to mention the name of any idol that is written in the 24 books of the Hebrew Scriptures, the five books of Moses, etc., the prophets and the writings. B. Gates. Really, in the large pot? In the big pot? Oh, dude, I'll eat those three meals a day. I'll eat those for 3 days. Really? She takes good care of me. See, Izzy's in here. We've got 19 people in here. The wife, she was just in doing some cooking. She just popped back in. Yeah, my coba beans are like, I call them mea culpa beans. So anyway, that wasn't funny, I suppose. Okay, five again. It is permitted to mention the name of any idol that is written in the 24 books of the Hebrew Scriptures, such as Peor, Bel, Nebo, God, and the like. God, G-A-D. This is because a person intends that the idol should be eternally nullified, and this is similar to the ruling for any idol that one intends to degrade or nullify. This is an aspect of the permission to denigrate an idol. However, it is forbidden to swear in the name of these idols no matter where the intention is. So hopefully that was very, very clear. How come it looks like more people in your room than it is over here? I guess it's the way we got them stacked up. Huh, looks like she has more people in her room over there. Weird. Six, I'm on the bottom of 252. As an example in topic 4 above, there is no prohibition against mentioning the name of an idol unless one intends to honor the idol or refer to it in a way of importance. It is permitted to mention people's names that are identical to the names of idols as long as one's intention is for the person's name alone. 7, one should not say to an idol worshiper, may your God, small g, be with you, or may your God give you success, small g. Do this for me in the name of your God, small g, or the like, since it would be giving honor to the idol. So, when talking to somebody, what we'll say is you'll see people type a B and two little dots, H, that's Baruch Hashem, bless his name. Or we'll say God willing or something like that. So we say that because that's talking about the Abishter, the big guy. But other people say it in the name of whatever deity they believe in, and that's a no-no. You can't ask somebody to do that in the name of whatever. That's kind of a no-no. 8. It has previously been explained that just as it is forbidden to swear in the name of idols, it is also forbidden to make others swear in their name, because doing so would give recognition to the idol. A person who swears in the name of an entity shows his faith in the truth and everlastingness of that entity, such that it is fitting to always rely upon. Therefore, if one Gentile wishes to swear in the name of an idol of his own accord, it is forbidden for another Gentile to accept such a vow, as this would appear to lend support to the entity in whose name the person swears. Which makes it this is kind of very interesting. If you're going into court, and this has been one of the dilemmas that have popped up in England, if you follow the news on what's going on with the Muslims in England, they're getting some of their Sharia law stuff into place in England and trying here, and hopefully it doesn't work. We don't need to be under another set of laws other than the ones we have. 9. This is interesting. It is permitted to mention people's names that are identical to the names of idols, as long as one's intentions is for the person's name alone, which happened one year when I had three little kids in my class who were Hispanic, and those three people have the name of one of the deities of another faith. And I looked at the list, and I looked at them, and I thought, yeah. Here I'm a new teacher, and looking out over a sea of smiling faces, and I look down on my list, and I've got three of them. I said, oh, man, there are three of you. So that was kind of a little bit of humor, but... If a Gentile was named after an idol by his parents, there's no special procedure required if he wishes to change his name. A person is the ultimate decider of his own name, and he merely needs to let his decision be known publicly and follow the procedure required by the secular court. So, if you have a name, and this has come up before, if you have a name that is a name that is normal in another faith, Rabbi Katz, I even got my little wifey on the bicycle. Yeah. Thank you. Izzy, it's so wonderful seeing you. It's really, really wonderful seeing you. And next time when you come in, I'll give you some time. I'd love to hear your flute playing again. It's been a very long time. But here's where we're hiding. My best to everybody out there you still talk to. It's, if you want to know where we are, we're hiding in here. Maybe next week, Izzy, show up a little early and or in class, and you can start the class with your flute playing. Beautiful. So anyway, as I was saying, yeah, that would be very cool. Yeah, his flute playing is wonderful. He does a nigun with his flute. Nigunim are just wonderful. There are people out there, and this has come up in one question, an email that I got. If you have a name that was given to you by a prior faith that you had, what about changing your name? Idea? It's your name. Decide. But also, you need, again, the difficult part here, and this is something that is very, very important to consider, is you have a family, okay? Some people get very zealous. There are faiths out there that you get into that are very zealous in their belief, and people take on that zealousness. And then when they become a righteous Gentile, I mean, how can you be zealous about not doing something? So I would really consider and see what kind of impact it would have on the family before you changed it. But it's a good idea, okay? What about when the name is no longer worshipped? I need an example. My given name bears no relevance to any religion or entity. It's just I know when it's time to eat. Oh, that's cool. That's not a problem. That's not a problem at all. That's not a problem at all. Your name is Lunch. Very good. Yes, Omar, please. I can't believe Izzy was in here. I haven't seen Izzy in a long time. Okay, Omar, I'm all... T. Ooh, good doggy. Okay, Omar. I am told that my name is a Muslim name, but I say you're... No, am I right? You know something, Omar? Here's an interesting one. I had a kid this year. His name was Vladimir. A Hispanic kid by the name of Vladimir. I said, Vladimir, why do you have a Russian name and you're Hispanic? He would go, I don't know. Yeah, it's not a problem. Omar, it's not a problem. It's... Today, people are hypersensitive to anything surrounding Islam. It's just what they are. I'm sure you're going to recognize, yeah, it's a biblical name, don't worry about it. But most people would look at it and say, Omer, Omer. I said Omer, didn't I? And it's Omar. Omer is barley. The offering of barley. Okay. Any other questions? Hopefully that answered your question, Omar. Omar. Omar Gevalt. Anybody else? Frank Zappa, Moon Until Dweezil, Ahmet Roden, and Diva. How cool is that? Oh, how cool. You're Basque. Oh, your family is Basque? Oh, man, Basque food is killer. Family style Basque food is just killer. Pickled tongue. Oh, man, that's good stuff. The soup and the beans. June's a nice name. You did a DNA test for what? This is the most interactive class that I've had in here to date. This is outstanding. What's your DNA tests tell you? Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, share it. What's your DNA test? Tell other people. I know, but tell them. Or don't. It's up to you. It's your test. Big Gates. Yeah. Yeah. How cool is that? His blood goes from right to left. Yeah, the Basque is cool. You know what, Omar? You might have a family that goes back to... Chesed. Omar, you might be part of... Basque is an area in the Pyrenees Mountains between Spain and France. They're mostly shepherds and very interesting people and have just very good food. Yeah, I have a beret. Yeah, they're just cool people. But anyway, Omar, there's a lot of people who, Jews who fled north. They didn't necessarily head south and go into Africa after the expulsion of 1492. And don't forget, the Battle of Tours happened just north of there in southern France. So there's a possibility that your family was run out of Spain and ended up in that particular region and in southern France. Many Australians have Jewish blood because the Jews have been here from the time of the First Fleet. Yeah. We're everywhere. I mean, we backed up the Mayflower, man. Actually, my father's family backed up the Mayflower, but that's another story. Lost me. Okay, Omar. Omar. The Jews of Spain were... What? Has anybody heard of a Cherokee Jewish connection? Ah, the Schmohawks, yeah. Omar, you have a group of people in Spain. The Jews were... Twisted got that one. In Spain, the Jews were in Spain, they're expelled in 1492. Most of them left the southern route, got on ships, went into North Africa, and were dispersed. But there's a good possibility, and I wouldn't doubt it, if some of your family went north. If they went north over the Pyrenees into southern France, and some of them stayed in the Basque area, that explains the right-to-left blood that's in your veins. Interesting, huh? The expulsion was very interesting. There's a lot of Jews that went from Spain to Portugal. So, yeah, I'm a history buff. What can I say? Okay. Any other questions? How are we doing on time? Ooh, 7:10. Cool beans. Well, June, how am I, June, your first time in here. How am I doing? What is right to left blood? Chesed? That's Jewish blood. Jewish blood goes from right to left. Not bad? Uh-oh, I gotta straighten out my act. I have a cool do-rag on. How's that? Like the writing. Yeah, thank you. Ooh, I got one past Chesed. That was cool. Yeah, right to left. Yeah, exactly. Blood flows right to left if you're Jewish. Yes, ma'am. From what? Work means comp. Cool. Lightning. Lightning tonight instead of skulls. I'm left-handed. Does that count for anything? People with left-handed, they're, thank you. People who are left-handed have a shorter life expectancy because their life is harder being left-handed. Unless you've bought a whole bunch of stuff for specifically left-handed people. There is a study about that. That's true. That's true. My son's a lefty. And actually, this is cool. There's something called, there is something called Yad Eliezer. My wife is a lefty. And there's something called Yad Eliezer. There are halachas for left-handed people that are different than right-handed people. Very cool. As an example, you put on tefillin on your left arm if you're a righty. Yeah. And if you're a lefty, you put it on your right arm. My son ties his tefillin on his right arm. Well, rabbis who are comfortable with who they are usually kind of a crack up, because they can make very, very obtuse references to things, and the humor is just a crack up. The rabbis studied a bit. Some of the humor is a crack up. Yeah, there you go. If you see what Chesed put up there, you put on your shoes. If you're right-handed, you put your left shoe on first. You know, wiping your tush. Yeah, you're supposed to use your left hand, not your right. And if you're right-handed, the other. Yeah, seriously. You put on, if you're right-handed, the left leg, pant leg goes on first, and it's the opposite if you're lefty. When you... Yeah, right. When you carry the Torah, right-handed person puts it on one side, a left-handed person does it on the other. However, if the congregation doesn't know that they're a left-handed person, they carry it like a right-handed person, so people won't get confused and upset, etc. Okay? But there are a whole bunch of halakhas around that if you're a lefty. Yep. My son and I had this discussion once upon a time. I was talking a little bit of philosophy, and I was telling him the right side is the inclination to do good, the left side is the inclination to do evil. And my son looked at me and he said, "Daddy, I'm left-handed. Does that mean I'm evil?" And I about my jaw just dropped down to the floor. I mean, it was like I can't. He caught me flat-footed. I sputter, backpedal real fast and said, no, of course, and went off to another subject. And I busily looked it up and found out there are halachas for lefties. And I got the book called Yad Eliezer, and we sat down together and read it. It was very cool. Very cool. So yeah, if you're a lefty, there's a set of, if you're Jewish, you're lefties, there's a set of halachas. And yeah, my father was born a lefty, but he was born during the time where they wouldn't let him be a lefty, so he's a righty. My wife went originally to private school, they wouldn't let her be a lefty, but she's now kind of ambidextrous. She writes with one hand and does stuff with other hands. Okay, I wonder if I can get through this chapter tonight. Yeah, we'll get through this chapter tonight. I'm very happy. Hashem doesn't make you left-handed so he can kick your tuchus. That's funny. Okay. We're on page 253, number 7. Oops, excuse me, number 8. V8. Huh? Gates. Oh, this, yeah, you did. That. My voice gets scratchy, and these people out here tell me to keep drinking. Rabbi, I'm on 9, I'm sorry. Rabbi, your voice is scratchy, drink something. Yes, ma'am. Okay, 9. It has previously been explained in Chapter 1 that some rabbinical opinions maintain that a Gentile is not forbidden to believe in a mistaken concept of an intermediary to God. And this includes a belief that other entities exist that is fitting to respect because this is the will and honor of God. The rabbinical opinions that say this is not forbidden admit that it is forbidden to perform any type of worship service for the supposed intermediary. Nevertheless, if such a belief itself is not forbidden, it is likewise not forbidden to swear in the name of a God, of God together with the name of an intermediary that one believes in as another divinity. This has got to be careful on this one. How would a person state such a combined vow? He would mention that he vows in the name of God, small g, where his intention is for both the true God and the intermediary, which he has added, but is forbidden to swear in the name of God, large g, with the intermediary's name separate. That's an obvious reason. Because it's a different deity you would be swearing to. Even if no person serves the intermediary as a separate idol, it is served as a deity and a secondary to God. It is forbidden for one to mention the name in a vow as a separate divinity because it appears that he considers it to be his God, small g. Wow. Clearly, it is forbidden to vow by including the name of God with idolatry, meaning with the name of an idol, it is not served as an intermediary to God, but rather it is served as a separate God. Okay, God and Yoshka. Okay? If you don't know who Yoshka is the J guy in another faith. And there are people who have come up with God, or as some people call the Father, I suppose, and the J guy. So they will say, well, they're separate, but they're the same, and all of this stuff. You don't do that. That's a no-no. Here's a little more. It appears that it is forbidden to swear in the name of an intermediary on its own. For example, now here's, I think, your answer to your question, Twisted. For example, for those who usually swear in the name of God and the J guy, It is forbidden to mention the J guy alone. And they actually spell out his Hebrew name for that guy in here. The only permitted vow of the sort is, as mentioned above, to swear the name of God in reference to both God and the J guy. Okay? You, I like that. Yeah, it's best to just leave it alone. Yeah. Nothing can come of that. It's just a hard part. The intermediary isn't an intermediary, okay? But but people are leaving that belief system, okay? And some people have a difficult time with that. Or you're in a situation where something comes up. The best thing to do is there's only one God. Period. Leave the other stuff out of your vocabulary. That's the easiest way to do it. That's a yummy one. Hey, this is a yummy one. Ten and 11. Oh, I'm going to get this done in time. How cool is that? What about this idea of shituv? What is shituv? What's shituv? What's shituv? Some people think they need someone between them and God, the best. Yeah. What is shituv? Oh, that's the intermediary thing? Yeah. Okay. We went through this once before. Okay, everybody take your hand, go like this. Okay. Go like this. Everybody go like this. Okay? Everybody do that? Stop typing. Do this. What? There is current email being sent out privately to encourage me to missionize. Yeah, it's very dangerous. Okay, go like this. Now, how close is God? In Genesis, it says that God blew the soul into Adam. Didn't say God pulled away. God is this close. Put your palm of your hand on the end of your nose. I got a nice big Jewish nose. Okay? That's how close God is. Nothing fits between. There is no intermediary. So there's nobody else that can go in there. That's how close God is. God is right here. As far as not a problem, not a problem. There is a current email being sent out privately. Please don't, until you learn this, don't go missionizing, okay? Because it's too dangerous for somebody who's always going to find someone who knows more than you do, and they may schlep you off the derrick, or they may put heretical thoughts in your mind, or make you double think or something. Let's suppose you're out there missionizing to those other people, and you're missionizing away, and somebody knows a lot more than you do on a particular subject, and they all of a sudden say something, and in the back of your mind you go, well, I never thought of that. That second you do that is a sin, because you are entertaining thoughts of heresy. So, don't do that. We don't missionize. We do not missionize. You don't see Jews knocking door to door. Hi, can I sell you on the stone edition Chumash? We don't do that. We do not missionize. We don't do it. Because number one, Omar, this is brand new. This is still hot off the press. If you know this, and this is only volume one, there's a total of 5 volumes, I believe. If you know this book, inside out, upside down, and sideways, send me an email because you can teach me. I'm learning some of the stuff in here. You know, this is the Kitzer. I got the Shulchan Aruch part out there. It's very cool stuff. But you have so much to learn that you don't want to get there. Yeah, you just don't want to go there. We don't missionize. God didn't create a religion. No, God didn't create a religion. Plus, you need to be able to give them information for the truth if you haven't studied the seven laws. Yeah, exactly. Hoki's brilliant. Hashem didn't create a religion. No, Hashem didn't create a religion. Men created a religion. Why would God create a religion? All right. Yeah, don't go missionizing, because if you go missionizing and don't know the laws, you get yourself in trouble. And if you don't know them in great enough detail, all you're going to do is make yourself look foolish. You don't want to go there. You want to learn this. You want to learn up there on the whiteboard those seven laws, inside out, upside down, and sideways. And don't go missionizing, because you're not going to convince anybody. They're going to look at you and say, well, you don't believe anything. You're going to go to hell. Ain't going to happen. But if asked a question, Twisted, if you're asked a question, answer the question or give them my email address. I don't mind. Have them email me. I'll answer any question they got. But like I said, you guys get into heaven by not doing six and doing one. How cool is that? You get into heaven by not doing six, by simply abstaining from worshiping false gods, the prohibition against cursing God's name, not to murder, not to have forbidden sexual relations, not to steal, and not to eat the flesh of a living animal. By not doing those, you get credit. And by voting for judges or helping to establish justice in your neighborhood or your town, you get credit for that. That is a quick trip to heaven, period. How cool. That's amazing. I got 626. Most people are going to ask you where it is written. Let's see, seven laws of Noah. Well, if they take a look at the Bible, Chesed, The first one that came out was a law for Adam and Eve. Then after Adam and Eve got booted out of the garden from doing something they shouldn't have been doing, there were six laws. Those six laws were handed down until the flood. Then after the flood, the seventh law, which is the prohibition against eating flesh from a living animal, was handed down, which gives us seven. So it came down from Adam and Eve. Okay? Very simple. So until the flood, there were six laws. So if we didn't have all that flood stuff, there would be the six laws of Noah. Was Job a Noahide? That's an interesting one. You know something? I don't know. I would say no. Because I think he predated that. That's one of the ancient books. He believed in God, and he was a pawn during a test. Would I say he's a Noahide? No, I would say he was a righteous Gentile, no question. He was a righteous Gentile. He had a belief in God. He wasn't Jewish. Yeah, my wife turned off the light. I don't know why, but she did. I don't know. My wife turns off my light all the time. Walks over here and snaps the old switch off, and that's it. Ask her. She's sitting right over there. But what was that? I asked to get glare off picture over your head. Oh, well, let me turn this light back on. Does that get rid of it? Yeah. Oh, no, it isn't. The glare? Probably. You mean this glare right there? Oh, how's that? Is that better? That's much better. Yeah, that's cool. There, it's gone. Is that okay? You're welcome. But it gives me a weird kind of a look. Cool. Yeah. Turn down my own brightness? I'm not messing with my wife's computer. This is her computer, man. I don't touch anything. I just move the mouse once in a while so little fishies don't swim by. Big improvement. Oh, I'm glowing. Oh, okay. I'm all aglow. Okay, I got 10 and 11, then I'm going to go into the tour portion. I'm glowing. Not glowing here. Okay. Even though belief in an intermediary is not forbidden to Gentiles, this belief is not true. It is fitting for every person to see the mistake in this idea, which originated in mistaken beliefs of Enosh and his generation, and to distance oneself from it, especially since many of the great sages determine that belief is actual idol worship. The permission is only for one who wishes to make others swear in their beliefs, that even if one knows that the one who swears will have intention for his intermediary as well, it is permitted to accept the vow, since there is no prohibition involved in which the name of an actual idol worship is mentioned. I don't know. I think it's the light here bouncing off the metal here and up in my face. I'm probably going to get a sunburn now or something. Is what? Sunscreen. Great. So we went in and we had a very long discussion once upon a time about Enosh and what he did and why what he did was a huge problem and was the beginning of idolatry. So we had that discussion some months back. 11 in the last one. Da, 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 da. We're on page 255. And you might want to get your chumash out after this because I'm going to head into the Torah portion, but not the way you expect me to. Uh-oh. yeah. Okay. However, in the future messianic era, that's when the Mashiach arrives, what? So is this saying that we should assume that those other guys believing in God should be excused for their belief in the J-Man? No. No, that's what they do. They have an intermediary. What this is saying very clearly in number 10, there's no point in doing an intermediary. It says that you can have an, you can, but you're not going to swear by the intermediary. Just don't go there. Just don't go there. No intermediary. One God, period. Nothing in between. Remember, hand on front of nose? That's it. Your hand is front of your nose. The other hand won't fit in there because you got a nose in the way. So people have an intermediary feeling that they're going to have to pray to someone who'll go to someone who'll go to someone. Man, they don't... I'm sorry, we talk to the big guy straight up. You guys talk to the big guy straight up. And what's really interesting, and this is something that I've had lots of talks about over the years, there are people who can only talk to God if they have some formal method of prayer. You should just talk to him all the time. Pour your heart out. He listens. And women, oh man, God listens to the tears of women. So women, if you got something going on in your life, add a tear or two and it gets ahead of the line. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, let me finish this up. 11. However, the future messianic era in the world to come, the occupation for the whole world will be solely to know God. As it says, for then I, God, will convert all people to pure language that they may all call in the name of God to serve him with one consent. And all will know that God alone exists and there is no other divinity aside from him. that is fitting to rely upon. Rather, all will depend on God alone, as the prophet says. And God will be king over the entire world, and on that day God will be one, his name shall be one. Oh, I remember that from... This means that even his name will be one and exclusive in the mouths of all, and there will be no belief in any other existence, even as an intermediary, as it says. Know therefore this day, and take it to your heart, that the Lord is God in heaven above and upon the earth below. There is no other, period. Wow, that was cool. Okay. So the next section, amen. The obligation to respect God's name and what is forbidden is blasphemy, obligations to revere and fear God, laws of vows and promises, annulment of vows and promise, and vows made according to the public understanding. Interesting. That's going to be starting next week. This week, we have Parshan Korach. All right. Any questions about last week's Torah portion? About the spies and all that? They were Meraglim, they weren't spies, they were tourists. Here's an interesting question that I have for you. And watch my wife zip up there and type the answer in lickety-split. Her fingers are on the typewriter, go, and it's just going to... See what I mean? The little green AB goes on there. Okay. Here's... My payas gets stuck in my ear and it itches. All right. Here's an interesting thought. Last week's Torah portion was Shelech Lecha. Send for yourselves tourists, Meraglim, if you will. That was last week's Torah portion. This week is Korach. What? Where? I just said that. Well, it's the Parsha Shelech Lecha. Send. Lishloach is the verb to send. Okay, now, here's an interesting thought. Listen. Last week, the Meraglim, the tourists, went into the land, and they came back, and they committed a huge travesty, an act of Lashon Hara on the land. Okay? It was really, really, really hideously bad. Okay, people were shouted down, people were lamenting, we're not going to make it in this land. And God even told Moses that if you want to send these tourists in to go look around, send them for yourself. Shelech lecha, send for yourself. Oh yeah, it was Lashon Hara. Because they gave a bad report. Rebecca, read last week's Torah portion, Shelech lecha. I don't have any idea what page it's on. It's, I know them by Torah portion. Probably Chesed will be able to punch it up real fast. 821. Thank you, Francis. Give her a couple stars if you'd be so kind. 821, yeah. Okay, that was last week's Torah portion. So anyway, in last week's Torah portion, the tourists, as I call them, they weren't true spies. They weren't true spies. They went into the land. Oh, okay. Well, Rebecca, I'll catch you up on that. So anyway, the spies go out. These tourists went out. And the Torah calls them, the English calls them spies. They weren't. They went out. They came back after 40 days, and they gave a hideous report. Males came back. And if you take a look at the order, take a look in the weeks before that, when we talked about in the Torah portion about the guys who brought the utensils, if you will, to dedicate the temple, and Nachshon ben Aminadab was first, and these guys were of renown and all of that. Then you compare and contrast that to the order of the tourists that went in, and take a look at that order of people, compare and contrast, which is a very interesting thing to do. But going another step further, when they came back, did Lashon Hora on the land, why was it that we ended up in 40 years of wandering? What was that all about? Why do we end up in 40 years of wandering? Any thought on that one? Here's a very interesting thought. That's what they say, 1 year for every day in the land. However, Oki, actually they never did forget, because Rebecca, if you go into Deuteronomy, when Moshe Rabbeinu is giving the blessing and the curse stuff, he reminded them after 40 years of what they did. They didn't forget the Lashon Hora, and we still, we're 3,300 years later, and we're still talking about it. But here's what happened. Listen to this. This is very interesting. It's a Chiddush. It's a very novel idea that I read. That took that long to prove whether they were faithful, because they lamented when we had to wander. But if you take a look, here's the interesting thing that happened. Listen to this. In every single time, Omar, it's much more than that. And it wasn't the adults. Hang on one second. Everybody, time out. Stop typing for a second, because there's some comments I want to make on those. Here's what happened. It's a little more than that. Okay, here's what happened. I'm not going to look at the screen because you guys keep popping stuff up. Here's what happened is, every time we messed up, we guys messed up. Let's take the golden calf incident. Who wasn't involved in the golden calf incident? Women. They didn't participate. The guys went to their wives and says, hey, I need your earrings. We've got to go do this little golden calf thingy over here. And the women says, are you nuts? Get out of here. What did they get? Women got a holiday called Rosh Chodesh, which is a new month. Every single time we went to blow it, women were the ones who schlepped our sorry tukuses out of the oven, so to speak. We were making the mistake. The women fixed it. Also, the women, as a whole, were behind Moses. They were, if all these guys are coming up to Moses saying, we want to do this and this and this, and Moses is standing there with all the women behind him saying, no, you're not, we didn't do it. And the women kept saving our sorry tukuses. The problem in Parsha Shelech Lecha, it says in there that even the women were lamenting what's going to happen to our babies. We're going to go into there. There's giants are going to attack us. So it wasn't, this is the first time that women sided with the men against Moses. And that's the reason we ended up in 40 years of wandering. How's that for an interesting Chiddush? I thought that was very, very, very unique. Yeah, think about that. Go back. This is the wonderful thing about Torah study is in other faiths, they take a phrase out of Torah, bounce into the prophets of the writings, then into whatever their Bible is, and they say this stuff that I don't even understand where they come up with it. But if you take a look and you start tying the entire picture together, it makes phenomenal sense, and it tells the plight, and it tells the mistakes of very, very human people. We're very human people. We blew it. I mean, here's another interesting. It wasn't the women who died. In the 40 years of wandering, it was the men who died. All the men who had participated, all the men who left Egypt were dead. There were women who left Egypt who went through the parting of the sea and ended up going into the promised land. But it was the men who ended up in the last year digging a hole, going to sleep in the hole, and if they didn't climb out the next day, they filled in the hole. The reason we knew it was the time to go into the promised land is because Nobody died. Between the 9th of Av and the 15th of Av, people stopped dying. Actually, between by the 1st of Av, the 9th of Av, that was it. And we waited a few more days, then we went in. Why didn't the women? Because these guys show up with these big steaks, with these grapes the size of basketballs. And they, finally, they just wore them down. And the women just lamented with the men. And that's it. That got us 40 years of wandering around. Okay? Got the picture now? We B'nai Noach cannot afford to blow it. You guys are... I have a tremendous amount of respect for what you folks are doing. A tremendous amount of respect. You are doing... What you're doing is phenomenal. You're walking in some ways, you're walking away from faith that you had growing up as a child. You know, people baptized in this church and in that church and did this and that their entire life, and all of a sudden you walk away from it. It's like me. I was raised in a fairly liberal home. And I turned my back on that stuff 40 years ago. And my family still thinks that I'm this crazy religious fanatic. My brother won't talk religion with me. He thinks I'm a fanatic. I'm not a fanatic, but, you know, that's what they think. So it's hard. But what you're doing is, instead of, you know, taking a step up, putting on a black hat and a yarmulke and all that stuff, wearing tzitzit and davening, etc., you're walking away from a communal, I'm a good fanatic. You guys are stepping into something that for other people, they can't understand how you can just not do six and then do one and you go to heaven. But that's simply the way it is. You're easy. It's just the easiest way to heaven. It is because Hashem called us and awakened our hearts to know that our teachers have to be the Jews. You know, June, I appreciate that greatly, but you know what's even cooler than that, June? This is something that is really great. When the Mashiach arrives, you're going to be my neighbors. My house for dinner. How cool is that going to be? Go have a barbecue in my backyard, man. Great. Good stuff. But it's the other people, according to the Gemara, the other people are the ones are going to be a bit on the harsh side as far as being judged. You guys are great. I have a tremendous amount of respect. I love you guys a lot. Okay, I can't wait either. All right. Korach, Parsha Korach. This is kind of... I have a very interesting, I don't know, this is a very interesting Torah portion. Parsha Korach, before we get into what Korach does or not does, is all of that stuff. Hang on a second. No, that's not it. Where is it? Where is it? It's got to be in this one. New. Last week's Torah portion. Okay, Korach. Hey, Eddie's here. Okay, Parsha Korach. This week's Torah portion. Okay, got a private message I'll take care of after class. Korach was a Kohen, and Korach had a wife who said, hey, look at this. Moses and Aaron, you're a Cohen, they're a Cohen. How come you're not in charge? You have a right to do that. You have a right to be the big kahuna. The big kahuna is the Cohen Gadol. You're of the correct tribe, the family line. And his wife urged him to say, hey, take a couple of your friends, go over there and tell, hey, guess what? Moses, Aaron, you're fired. I'm taking over. This is the part, if you take a look at later on in this Torah portion, if you read through it, it says that the mouth of the earth opened up and swallowed Korach's family whole. Remember reading that? Hey, Deborah lives here. How's your husband? Okay. The mouth of the earth opened up and swallowed Korach and his family. What's this mouth of the earth? The mouth of the earth, during in Pirkei Avot, which are ethics of the fathers that we read during the summertime, it says that at twilight, before the first Shabbos of creation, there were 10 things that were made. One of them was, of course, the mouth of the donkey that spoke. And the other, there's 9 other things, and one of those 9 other things was the mouth of the earth. The mouth of the earth was created specifically for one purpose, to swallow, because it says the earth swallowed Korach and his family, and you could hear them under the ground. In fact, there are places, if you go to Israel, where people could take you on a tour, and you can actually go to these places and put your ear close to the ground and supposedly still hear the moans of Korach and his family. It's world-class creepy, and I choose not to go visit that place. I don't want to hear it. Yeah, I'm serious. Oh, yeah, I am serious. Oh, yeah, you can still hear that place. And if you go to Israel and you get a tour guide to take you there, it's like world-class creepy. So I don't go there. But so what happened was, is they show up, and this is in the Torah. I'm not reading the Torah portion, because every time I read the Torah portion and some of you guys don't read it, I'm going to make you read it by giving you some little novel ideas in there. So Korach's problem was pride. He was a very, very proud man. His pride was wounded because Moses apparently ignored him when he selected various dignitaries. And if you take a look at Korach's family tree, Levi, Kohath, Avraham, Yitzchak, Chevron, and Uziel, from Yitzchar's line was Korach, Naphtali, and Zechari. So Korach was off one of Levites. He's Levites, let's see, son, grandson, great-grandson. Okay? So what happened was, is Korach showed up with a bunch of his friends, 250 people, with their incense, and this happened the next day. Moses says, hey, show up with your friends with your fire pans, and God will decide. Well, these 250 guys that showed up were burnt to a cinder, and they took those fire pans, and they beat them into a layer of copper around the altar. It's kind of interesting to kind of remind us. Korach and his family was swallowed up. On, O-N-N, was a person who was supposed to show up, but he did not show up. His wife and daughter, of course, women again, saving male sorry tushies, plied him with alcohol. He slept in, and when the group came to go find him, they uncovered their hair, which, of course, kept these guys away. that's true. All of his descendants weren't taking part, and that's the part you guys are going to have to read. Okay? The ones who were saved from destruction was Korach's sons. They didn't end up in the hole. Another follower of Korach was Own, also escaped death. He was a member of Reuven, a neighbor of Korach's family, and as such drawn into the rebellion. When Own returned home from the first meeting, he related the story to his wife that he was taking part in the revolt. She argued, "What do you gain by it? Your position will be the same, whether Aaron or Korach is Kohen Gadol." He conceded the logic of her words, but explained that he could no longer disengage himself from Korach's party, since he had sworn at the meeting to join and offer the incense. In order to rescue her husband from disaster, it's very interesting, from disaster, Own's wife contrived a plot. She mixed strong drink and put him to sleep. Then she and her daughter uncovered their hair and sat at the entrance of their tent. When Korach sent messengers to summon him, they turned back in the sight of Own's wife and daughter. And so did several other messengers. Thus, Own appeared, never appeared before Moses at this time. Pans of Korach and his followers were made into a covering on the altar, and of course you know about the staff that bloomed, etc., etc., and we have Adi Ron in a minute, I'm sure. So, again, please, read the Torah portion. Something occurred to me. The problem with the spies was low self-esteem, as they viewed themselves as ants. Korach suffered from arrogance. It also seemed that we would have a healthy ego without going to either extreme, yes. Steve, also, if I can suggest, take a look at the list of people who brought the initial items to dedicate the Mishkan, and take a look at the group who were in the Meraglim, the tourists, and compare and contrast, and you'll see that the ones who were the arrogant ones, the ones who gave the false report, was a little different order. Okay? Well, I'm out of here in about a couple of minutes. I do have a question to answer offline, well, in private. In 1 second. I want to thank everybody for coming in. Nice to see you too, Eddie. And June, we hope we see you again. And those of you who are a new one here, we'd love to see you again. If you have questions, please send them. It'd be my honor to ask them. And do yourself a favor, do your level best to find yourself a local rabbi to help you out. Okay, I'm going to be in here listening to Adi Ron. If anybody's got a question, you got my PME thingy.